time for another edition of In and Out of Sports in the Coach's Corner with Coach Butch McAdams. And the show is sponsored in part by Horton's Funeral Services and Dr. Edward T. Buford, and powered, as always, by the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com for all of our shows. This show and past shows go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and also you will see the brilliance of my producer, legendary sports writer, columnist. He is Rick Hampton Sr. Well, folks, again, we have a legend in the Coach's Corner, and last week we spent a lot of time, actually the last couple of weeks, talking about the art of shooting the basketball. And we had a guy on last night, Andrew White, who was a first team All-Met, 1965. He could shoot the ball well. Brian Maggett, one of the all-time great shooters. And then, of course, we had just recently the shot doctor himself, Buzzy Braman. Well, tonight we have a young man that could flat out shoot it. And someone sent me something on social media today and said that they recall a game at Number 2 Boys Club. And I don't know whether this is legend or fact, but they said, I remember back in the day when our guests outscored an entire high school basketball team in a game down at Number 2 Boys Club. The final score was 112-46, and our guest had 51. He is Dunbar great, NC State great, and before then, I got to say, he was the ruler of Banneker Junior High and Playground off Georgia Avenue Northwest. He is Kenny Matthews. Kenny, how are you, man? Welcome into the Coach's Corner.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm so honored to be here. Yeah, thank you so much.
Now, is that rumor? Is it a folk tale, or is it true that at Number 2 Boys Club, and I don't want to embarrass the team, so I'm not going to give the name, that you outscored an entire team? They had 46 and you had 51. Do you recall that?
I do. I really want to say the name of the team, but I think
okay,
I'm
well, let's do it. I mean, hey, it was Woodrow Wilson Tigers.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And I had a great time. I was just on fire. And the guys, they were just feeding me the ball. They saw I was in the zone, and I was just letting it fly, and things were just going in.
You know, I've always, as a coach, been partial to shooters, because I still say we can talk about the intricacies of the game, but it boils down to putting the ball in the basket and how many times. And when you have someone that can consistently put it in the basket as well as you and Brian Maggett and Buzzy Braman and Skip Wise, Andrew White, you got a chance to win just about every game. You mentioned something. Share with us, from your perspective, Kenny Matthews, what does it mean when you say, and other shooters, but from your perspective, what do you mean when you say, I was in a zone?
Well, I tell you, you can, with me, I can pretty much feel the basketball. I can just about know when it's going in. And I had a pretty nice backspin. And once the ball released my hand, I can pretty much see that thing going in. And if I hit about three or four in a row, I really know I'm in some kind of a zone special. I just continue to let it go. And it's all about the backspin. And I used to always shoot a lot of jump shots. And when I was young, I used to play in the rain. It was just a wonderful thing to do. So I just loved to shoot the ball, and I got stronger. My arms got stronger, and I developed a longer shot. And I can pretty much feel it when I release my fingers.
Mm-hmm. Talk about form. And, of course, when we had the shot doctor, Buzzy Braman, who was the first hired shooting coach in the NBA, he made a point, which is well known, that there are four ways you can miss: long, short, left, or right. And a good shooter, a phenomenal shooter such as yourself, you're very seldomly going to miss 2-3 in a row, because after every miss, you analyze quickly why you missed and you make that adjustment. But Kenny, talk to us about form in terms of how you shot the basketball. You mentioned the backspin, but talk about some of the aspect of shooting the ball.
Well, I tell you, you really have to work on your forearms, because if you really want to have a perfection on the shot, or close to perfection, you have to work on your forearms to get your shot going. Now, first of all, you don't really worry about your missed shot. I never really worry about my missed shot. I know I'm going to miss. But I get myself in a position and get my feet squared and try to shoot the basketball the same way that I always shoot it. And if you do that, the results are going to be pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. At what point did you realize that you had a special gift, and that was shooting the basketball?
Yeah, I think I picked that up from my brother, Larry Matthews. Larry, a couple years older than me. When the coach.
I remember your brother, yes.
Yeah, Larry seen something special in me, so he had me come down and play with him a lot. And I just built on my game. I was just something. We had a bunch of great guys who just loved to play, and I just played with a lot of older guys, and which made me better. And the thing about me, I wanted to get better. So I seen that I had some kind of a game that was developing. I just didn't know exactly how good I was. But the guys knew around me. They seen me play, and they had a liking for me.
And, talking about playing with and against older guys, I remember hearing about you when you were like 14, 15 years old up at Banneker, and the word around the city was, it's this young guy that's so good that the guys at Howard University are having problems with him, and that he could come on at 15 and play at Howard. Talk about playing at Banneker and some of those guys that influenced your game back then.
Yeah, we had some legends at Banneker. We had, Isaac and Herb Williams. We had David Bennett, Step Jones, so on and so forth. We had some great guys. These guys was like 3 or 4 older than me. We played a lot of Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola League games down there, and we played over Howard as well. We used to always go over Howard and play against the guys, and that's how they knew me, because when I would come over there, I would try to put on my best game, and they had seen the talent in me, and they always wanted me to play with them.
Can you imagine, and I don't know whether you often reflect back, but the 3-point line in high school didn't come about, at least in this area, the 1988 season. 1988, that was the first year from my recollect of the 3-point shot. But can you imagine back in 76 and 77 when you were at Dunbar, D.C., and they had the 3-point? I mean, that 51 could have been 70 conservatively.
Yeah, that is amazing, because I didn't have it in college as well. But when I decided to leave the Celtics and went overseas to New Zealand, I had a chance to play on that with that line overseas playing pro ball. And I was in the South Island of New Zealand when I scored 74 points in one game with 16 3-pointers. And
wow.
That was my first time seeing that line, and I just couldn't believe that. Just wish I would have had that in high school and college. That would have been great.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about every player, legendary player from this area, from D.C. We always talk about junior high school basketball. Now, this was before the AAU and the multiple traveling teams. Of course, as you stated, you had Pepsi-Cola and the youth games. But junior high school back then, Kenny, I mean, you were prepared – before you got to high school, and that's where a guy like a Kenny Matthews or Bebe Doran or Craig Sheldon or James Ratcliff, Rodney Wright, they build up their reputation in junior high school. So when they got to high school, people knew who they were, and it was a continuation.
Yeah, we had a lot of coaches that was that really know how to see talent, and we fell into a era that we had great coaches, and actually we had great players who wanted to become better. We just had so many leagues that we always wanted to play. We didn't have cell phones or any of that stuff around at the time, so it was all about playing ball and staying out on the court as long as you possibly can, because that is what I love to do. And all the guys that I knew in the early 70s, that is just what we wanted to do. So we played a lot.
And coming out of Banneker, you were one of the more sought-after junior high school players. Of course, the record states that you attended Dunbar and played for the great Joe Dean Davison. But before we get to that great coach and some of those great teams, were there other schools that you were seriously considering? Any private schools were recruiting you?
Yeah, it's amazing you said that, because Morgan Wooten, he wanted me at the Banneker pretty bad. I was in the Northwest area, so I was right there at Coolidge, Cadoza, and Roosevelt. So Joe Dean Davison, he just pulled me out of that zone and brought me in the Northeast area to Dunbar. And, of course, I agreed to it because I thought it was a good program. I thought he was a great coach.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd do some things there. And I think that was the greatest move I made in my life, to do that.
Wow.
It was a good move.
Wow. In the Coach's Corner, we're having a conversation with simply one of the all-time great shooters, and from my perspective, a great gentleman, Kenny Matthews. And Kenny, you go to Dunbar, and as you stated, you have a reputation, junior high school, playground. But now you're going to high school, and you're going into one of the top programs, not just in this area, but in the country. What transitions did you have to make from junior high school to high-caliber high school basketball? What was it like at the beginning?
Oh, it was tough because Coach Davison really was a mastermind in sports. And not only in sports, he knew people. So I was a young man coming to a big program, and the thing about me, I was willing to learn. And I recognized so many talented players that was in this group that Mr. Davison formed. And I was just trying to polish my game and to get with these guys. It was a big transition, but I was ready for the challenge. So it was very good for a young man to come in a big program like that and just try to blossom.
Expound more on Joe Dean Davison, because I'm doing everything that I can with my format to keep his legacy alive, because I don't think that the basketball fans, the players who weren't around during those days, understand his greatness. And when you mention Morgan Wooten, who I love, you mention Joe Gallagher, Frank Bolden, and others, Joe Dean is right there with them. He had a run where he was as good as any high school coach in this area or in the country. But talk about what made Joe Dean Davison a special coach and a special man. And share some stories, some memorable stories that you recall about Joe Dean Davison.
Well, I tell you, first of all, Joe Dean Davison didn't take any stuff from anyone. I don't care how talented he was. He just wanted to make sure you know that he is running the show, no matter what. He knew the talent. I didn't think he got basically all the credit he deserved, but there's so many people in the country knew of him and the mastermind that he had as far as putting young guys together and to win championships. Because my junior year, we were 29-0 in the senior. We had beaten everyone, and that was pretty amazing to me as a junior. get on a team like that and we win everything.
Mm-hmm.
Great. I just think he knows how to put people together to form a championship team. And he was a good man. He really was. I really miss him so much today. He is just really a good man.
I remember two things about Joe Dean Davison. First, as a true coach.
Mm-hmm.
And when I use the term true coach, I'm talking about someone whose main goal, look, every person who had put a whistle around his or her neck or a clipboard in their hands, they're competitive. We all want to win. But
yeah,
the real coaches, as competitive as they are, understand that at the high school level, the real win is about the development of young people. And I say that because Joe Dean did something that most coaches would not do. And when you said he didn't take any mess off anybody, Exhibit A was my good buddy and yours. I love this guy, one of the best, Stacy Robinson. Stacy was the premier player in this area and maybe in the country.
Yeah,
big game, Dunbar's undefeated, championship game, Kofa House. Stacy doesn't come to practice. Joe Dean sits him down. Sits him down, knowing that if Stacy played, all likelihood they beat the Matha. But he proved a point to Stacy and all of the young men that, hey, son, nobody is bigger than the program, and the main goal here is to be disciplined. And then the next week, I don't know whether you, because you weren't on the team that year, that was the year before you, the next week or two, they play the Matha again, and I think it's the Knights of Columbus. Stacy doesn't start. He comes off the bench, and he drops 44 on them, and they beat him. So,
Yeah, great.
And so you're talking about 2 years running where he would have been undefeated. Joe Dean was a one-of-a-kind coach, and, you know, if there are Hall of Fames available and he's not in them, he needs to be there because he was one of the best. Finally, I'm a young coach. I get my first really good team. We're in the Jealous Summer League. We had just played Woodson, H.D. Woodson. People didn't know what a Murray was or who we were, and we played well, and we beat Woodson. And I can remember Joe Dean coming up to me as a young coach and say, man, what's your name? Where's your school? I like how you coach them boys. Keep doing a good job. And, hey, look, Red Auerbach could have came up. Man, I was just so in awe. And I'll never forget that. But he is a great guy and one of the great coaches. Now, talk about that 76 team. That I always say when I get into questions and people ask me, well, Coach, who are the top four or five high school teams in this area that you've witnessed? I said, well, there are a lot, but from my perspective, there's no right or wrong, but from my perspective, I'm going with the Carroll team of 59 and 60 with John Thompson, Hoover, and Lefferich. Then I'm going with the 65 DeMatha team that beat Lou Alcindor. And then after that, I'm going with the 76 Dunbar team. You guys had talent, Kenny, but you had chemistry. Talk to us about that team and what made it so special.
Yeah, I think you hit that on the nose. We did have a lot of chemistry. We didn't have many guys with egos. We knew how to gel. I mean, we spent a lot of time together, so we've gotten to know each other well, even as a young kid. So we all liked one another, and we knew we had something special there. We knew we had something special. We were too young to see it. Jodine Davidson knew. We knew we had something special there, but to go 29-0 in 1976, the bicentennial year, is incredible, and I still cherish that moment today.
And then looking at that team, and look, my friends in Baltimore, I love y'all, Coach Wade and all of the guys.
Yeah.
And I've had the legends of Baltimore on with Timmy Green, Skip Wise, Reggie Williams, Muggsy Bogues.
Wow.
I've had them on. And those were some great teams, and we debate Dunbar Baltimore 73 versus Dunbar Baltimore 83. But I gotta put y'all in the mix. I don't mean no harm, but in a series, I think the 76 D.C. Dunbar team could get both of them. And I was teasing my good buddy Ernie Graham, who was a tremendous player. But I said, hey, Ernie, I remember you and your brother Kevin. Twice y'all had problems with Big Sky. And that was the – talk about Craig Shelton, man. Craig Shelton was unstoppable at the high school level.
He played even bigger than 6'7". This guy was just that big in high school. And I thought he was still growing. I thought Craig was going to be at least 6'9". I mean, this guy played so far above the rim. And I don't think he knew how far he was up above the rim. But he is a phenomenal player. We needed him so badly to win the Baltimore games, the DeMatha games, the Coolidge games, the Knights of Columbus tournaments. We needed Craig Shelton. And he really came through for us. And we're very happy to have him. Years.
And then you had every team needs a great floor leader, a general, a coach on the floor, and none better than John Bebe Doran. John Doran could get everybody fired up, especially Big Sky. But talk about what Bebe meant to the team that year.
Unbelievable. He's like the general. This guy, I've never seen so much talent in the guy. As in Bebe, he was he ran the team, made sure everybody knew exactly where to be on the floor because he was going to get the ball to you. And I mean, he could get the ball to you. So I just had to be where I needed to be because he would get the ball to me and just the way I wanted, and I would release it. And he was such a great talent. He knew basketball so well. And I learned a lot from him. Just 1 year ahead of me, and we had some great times.
And finally, on that great 76 team, and you alluded to the chemistry of the team, which is so important. But, I give Joe Dean Davison credit. I always give my great friend, mentor Bob Wade credit. And, some people who really don't know the game will say, well, it's easy to coach talent. Well, you have to have talent to win, but it's not that easy because when you get a collection of all who's who from middle school and junior high school, and then you have to blend them together as a team, that takes a lot of coaching. And you guys
had
discipline, man. I mean, you guys were there.
It does. I think he instilled that in us because we wasn't going to let one bad person mess this team up in any kind of shape or form. And we're not saying that we had one, but if there was any kind of problem along the way, we was going to find a way to stand that out.
That's
right. I mean, I tell you, we were just so together, and we just wanted to win. And Jolene just he just taught us everything we need to know about young men.
Mm-hmm. Great conversation we're having in the Coach's Corner with Kenny Matthews. And Kenny, from 1976, you're undefeated. You're ranked number one in the country. But then a lot of those guys that we talked about, they graduate, and now you're the man, 1977. Mm-hmm. Talk about yet another transition from being a second or third option, as good as you were, but you were the second or third option. And now you're the man. Talk about that.
Yeah, Coach Davidson pulled me to the side from the beginning of the year, and he made it clear to me that he wanted me to shoot the ball. And I mean, shoot the ball. Don't look at me. Put the ball up. We're going to run an offense, and I need you to score the ball. So I did, and I done fairly well. And we came out 19-5. We lost 5 games, and we've done well. So it was a transition, but I was a little older, got a little stronger, And I knew that the ball was going to be in my hands a lot, so I had to perform. So I was very happy to do that.
And you perform exceptionally well. And now it comes down to a decision on college. You had so many options. Obviously, you selected NC State, but before we get to that, talk about some other schools that you may have visited and that were on your short list and why you selected State over those schools.
Yeah, I had a bunch of schools, especially after coming from five-star camp and with Howard Garfinkel. When I got MVP of the camp up there with Magic and Gene Banks and Wade McCoy and Jeff Lamp, we had Albert King, so many great talents up there. So after I did that, I had a chance to get a lot of letters from a lot of major schools. So I had UCLA, UNLV on my list, but for some reason I didn't travel on the West Coast. I didn't go that way. I wanted to stay close to home where I could come home on the weekends and see family, and I also wanted to play national television. I knew those things. So I decided to, didn't want to stay here in Washington, Georgetown. They wanted me to University of Maryland, which was great, but they had so many talented guys there. So I wanted to play against them. So I went to the ACC in North Carolina, and I even overlooked Dean Smith and UNC, which I think if I had a chance to do it over again, I probably would have won the UNC, but I made a good choice, and we just had to pay those guys at least two or three times a year. But I wanted to stay close to home, so that was a major thing I wanted to do for family and to get back home.
And again, we talk about transitions, and that's what life is about, and especially sports, transitions, and the people who are successful are the ones who are able to evolve and make the transitions from one level to another, because you constantly have to improve your game. So now talk about being a high school All-American, but now you're going to the NCAA level, and not just the NCAA level, but back then the ACC was the next step from the NBA. Talk about some of the things that you had to work on before playing in the ACC.
Yeah, you really have to pick your game up. I'm going against now. I'm a freshman coming in and playing against guys who's been in the league for a few years. So they knew I was a freshman coming in, so they're going to come after me. So I have to do everything I can to stay in the gym more and to do more to my body. Get ready for these guys, because the ACC is very competitive. And so I had a chance to know that firsthand by playing against a guy named Phil Ford at UNC. He was a senior, and I was a freshman, and I had to run up against this guy. And that's when the Four Corners was so popular with Dean Smith. So it's a big transition. You have to stay in this weight room, and you have to get your mind focused on trying to play in one of the best leagues in the country. And that's why I choose to go there. I had to prepare myself strong.
Now, were you able to play your natural position? Because when I interview a lot of players, like last night we had the legendary Andrew White on and others, and it was more prevalent back then than recently, but sometimes when you have a guy who's very talented and athletic, and he may be 6'3 or 6'4, but because of his athleticism, they'll stick him, you know, from a natural two-guard position to a 3 or 4. Were you able to play your natural position, which I always thought was the 2, at North Carolina State?
Yeah, that's good that you brought that up. 2 was my natural position. But I know being 6'4", they wanted me to play guard because it was something that I needed to learn. If the one guard would get into major foul trouble, and that would be something else that I can to learn. And also play some small forward. So, yeah, I had to make a transition to playing these three positions. But as you said, number 2 was my major position. But I had to learn them all.
Yeah, and see, when a guy like yourself, Excuse me, go ahead. Kenny.
Yes, I'm here.
No, I thought you were going to make a point. But the point I was going to make is that when you have a guy like you who have you have a tremendous skill, a basketball weapon, and that's shooting the ball. But when you have to have the responsibility of running the team, to me, that takes a little bit away from that weapon. You know, it would be better, like Joe Dean had you, to have a Bebe setting you up so you could come off a screen or double screen, catch and shoot.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what I wanted to do, but I know as my body got stronger and my mind got stronger as far as playing this game, I had to learn different areas and different ways to make my body and to come around to this particular game, because that's what it takes. You have to be ready for all positions.
And of course, North Carolina State had a reputation with local players, Kenny Carr, Hawkeye Whitney, Benny Bolton, I believe, played there, among others.
Yeah.
And then, of course, after you, it was Wittenberg, Lowe, Thurl, Bailey. But talk about the ACC back then. You mentioned North Carolina and Phil Ford, but, I mean, every game, every night, for two or three times a week, you were going up against a all-league player and a potentially NBA player.
You had Frank Johnson at the Wake Forest. Went up against Gene Banks and Kenny Denard at Duke. and Mike Chiminski at Duke. You have Al Ward at UNC. It's just so many great, talented ball players that came out by year. And I tell you, you really have to be ready to play, because you're talking about 15,000 screaming people that loves their basketball. And they really want you to win. And the excitement's in the air. And I had a great time playing against these guys. They're so competitive. And it made you a better place and a better player.
Yeah. And then, you know, you had Hawkeye Whitney. Oh, boy. Hawkeye Whitney. He was a special player. Talk about Hawk back in those days.
Yeah, Hawkeye is such a player. He had an all-around game, 6'5", small forward, but he can play guard. He a major player. We learned a lot from him. That was one of the reasons that I came there. It's also him and Clyde Austin was in front of me. Just wanted to play with those two talented guys to see what we can do. And I made a great choice, because Hawkeye is a very, very good talented player. And we won some very nice games with him.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Matthews is in the coach's corner. And, of course, Kenny, you were right behind Kenny Carr, but mostly you came in the shadow of one of the greatest players ever. And I don't know whether you had a chance to meet him or play with him and pick up or what, but I'm speaking of David Thompson.
David. I had a chance to meet him. We talk a lot. I just could not believe how talented this guy is and how strong this guy is. Phenomenal player. Good person. I tell you, I watched him play in the summer leagues. I've seen him play in the camps we had during the summer in the Carolinas. Yes, it's unbelievable. I just could not believe a guy that size can do the things he do on the court. So, yeah, very, very nice guy, very talented, and I learned a lot from him.
And I tell people that, and I'm going to see if you agree with this, but David Thompson was Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. David Thompson was Len Bias before Len Bias. Everything that Jordan and Lenny could do, David could do that and some. He was one of the greatest players I ever saw. He could shoot the ball. As you said, he was strong. He was athletic. He was just unreal as a basketball player.
Yeah, he said he would wear a lot of ankle weights playing ball. And when he used to also play a lot on these concrete courts. I mean, I think it was like double concrete courts, where he would always just jump on them with ankle weights. And because he originally from North Carolina, Shelby, and which is a small town, and that's all he did was play ball. And I just don't know how his legs got to be so strong, though, but he worked on his legs, and that's probably how he became at the 44 vertical leap.
Okay, now in high school, you played for a legendary coach. We mentioned Joe Dean Davison. At the NCAA level, you played for a guy who was a tremendous coach. He was a salesman, Jimmy V. Jim Valvano. What was it like playing for Jimmy V? And boy, share with us, if you can, a couple of memorable, funny Jimmy V stories. Now, I read a story once, and I don't know whether it's true or not, because, you know, Jimmy V can talk some trash, God rest his soul.
Yeah, he can.
But he told a story once, and this goes back to your confidence. He was saying, well, Kenny Matthews was a great shooter, but this one game he was off. He was like 0 for 14, and it was the last shot, and Kenny took it, and he missed, and we lost by one. And he said, Kenny, why did you take that shot, man? And you say, Coach, I was due. Is that a true story?
Yeah, it was true. I it's just one of those days where nothing really went in, but I know I always had confidence in my shot. And that's exactly how it went down. But he always would put his hands around you and walk you in the corner and walk you down the locker room and trying to get you to worry about those shots that you missed. But a great guy. He was, you know, always made us feel like he's one of the players. He just was so comfortable with ball players, and we really knew that was a great choice when they hired him. There was something about him that he brought down south to North Carolina State. And but yeah, very funny guy. Loved to be around players, and he would just tell you the facts of life.
Mm-hmm. Now, how different was it playing? And I hear the term a player's coach, and I never knew what that meant, because sometimes a player's coach can be something that's positive, a coach who cares about it, his or her players, or it could be a coach who, you know, is a little loose and doesn't run a tight ship. You play in high school for Joe Dean, who was a player's coach, but he ran a tight ship, as you stated. And then Valvano, I can't say his ship wasn't tight, and the players respected him and loved him. But talk about that thin line of being friendly with the players, but not necessarily being a friend of the players during the season.
Yeah, that's true. He always made himself feel like he was around the same age as us. He would play cards with us. He would ride in the same car and go to the, you know, to McDonald's with us or Burger King or whatever. But we respected him. I mean, he knew exactly how to turn you individually. We never did anything to upset him. And all he wanted to do was guide us in the right direction, because those are the steps that he has taken when he was coming around. So we knew we had something special in him to do. And so we just followed his footsteps.
Can you share with us a humorous or funny Jimmy V story? I talked about the one where he said, well, why'd you take the shot? And you said, hey, Coach, I was due. But can you share with our listeners maybe another funny Jimmy V story?
Well, he would always tell me, he reminded me of Norm Sloan, but You know, I shoot so much, and he saw me shoot so much in practice and games. But he would know I would take a shot from beyond the top of the key, and he might have run a play, and I would get the ball, and I would just, I mean, I feel it, so I would just take it up, and he would throw his hands up in the air like, no, 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 and then once it goes in. Smile so big, but it was just always he knew I would shoot the ball, but and sometimes I would just shoot it when I just want to shoot it, and he would just laugh at me, and he'd do it all the time. But mm-hmm. We had some great moments. There's so many great moments with him.
Yeah, were you excited, and did you take great pride? Two reasons. One, to watch your alma mater win that national championship game years later, and then to see three homeboys, so to speak, Lowe, Wittenberg, and Bailey, to be a part of that. Did you take great pride in that, being a former, NC State Wolfpack?
Yeah, that was a great moment. They fell right in the piece of the puzzle. Missing the 74 championship with the national championship with David Thompson, and then missing the 83 championship when I came out in 81. It was a great moment to watch those guys do that. It was a special moment. The timing was right, and they played phenomenal basketball to win that. Nobody gave them a chance. Everything just rolled in the right direction for those guys. And, yeah, I was very happy to see that happen. Wish I was part of it, but I missed it. But it's a great moment.
Mm-hmm. And then let's talk about yet another transition that you make, life after basketball. Now, when you left North Carolina State, talk to us about your career after that. Did you go overseas? Did you get a tryout? Talk to us about after NC State.
Yeah, I was Red Auerbach, the general manager for the Boston Celtics, had an eye on me since high school, and I didn't know it. So he drafted me in Boston in 81, and one of the hardest camps I've ever been in my life. I was very happy to be there. Very close to making the team. Very close, but didn't get a chance to make it. He wanted me to stick around and play in the Massachusetts area in the CBA. I was saying that I wanted to come home for a little while. So I decided to come home, and for about 2 or 3 days, and I got a lot of calls from a lot of countries. So I had to figure out which way I wanted to go. So I decided to go to some warm countries. So I went over to Whanganui, New Zealand. Made a stop 2 or 3 years there, went over to Temucuachi, South America, Argentina, Australia, toward Brazil, Ecuador, and so it's been a great ride to see some beautiful things, and it plays great ball.
Now, what was it like playing overseas in terms of making the adjustment, not just on the court, but socially, and just for some of us who may not be aware of life for a professional athlete overseas?
Yeah, you know, I realize that the people basically are the same all over the world. They just speak another language. They want to get to know you. You want to get to know them. You're in their country. They know about Americans. We just want you to come over there and treat them well. And if you do that, I think things will fall into place. It's a big transition. The language barrier. So I had a chance to speak different languages when I was there. But the people are basically, they open Americans up with open arms, and they welcome you. And so it's just great, a great standard of life over there.
And how difficult was it? Some people cannot put the basketball down, okay? and it's just not a great transition. But every time I see you, man, you look happy. You look great, and it appears that you were, like we used to say, the sign of a great entertainer is to know when it's time to get off the stage. Talk about yet another transition from basketball player to just regular citizen.
Yeah, it's a big transition. I've been very lucky that I never had a major injury playing this game. The only injury I had was in college when I tore a groin, when the first doctor said it was pulled, and I got a second opinion, but found out it was torn. But it healed in years. But it's all about taking care of your body and making the transition from basketball. But this game I really still love a lot because it just takes a lot of stress out of your mind, and it's just something that you can't put down that easily. And you just got to be very careful about who you're playing with as you get older.
Now let's go back to shooting. As I mentioned, I've had two of the greatest shooters on, Brian Maggett and Buzzy Brayman. Buzzy was all met in the class of 73, and Brian was all met, I think, in 74, 75. But
yeah.
Just in the gym or the playground, talk to us, what's the most shots consecutively that you can recall making from the free throw line and from the field?
Oh, wow. Took a lot of shots. Took a lot of shots. We'll go from the free throw line because I like to shoot shots and then go to the free throw line and shoot them because it's important to make the shot to your time. So I think I might have rounded off that shot and came to the free throw line. I think I must have hit about 51 shots or 52 consecutive free throw shots in a row. And I thought that was pretty impressive, doing something like that.
Wow, yeah, no question. And, you know, speaking of staying around the game, I know you watched the game today. And I always ask the question to our guest, and I'll ask you this question this evening. While watching games, who are some of the players that you like, and is there a player or two that when you watch him play, you say, well, hey, you know what? That guy's game reminds me a little bit of mine back in the day.
Well, of course, my idols was the Dr. Julius Erving. If you're going to talk about Julius, you have to talk about David Thompson. So, but there's so many talented guys that I can just bring the surface that I came up with that didn't get the recognition that I did, that could have easily had a chance to play on this Division I basketball. But I think my idol was the Julius Erving and David Thompson, because they was just they started the slam dunk contest in 76, and they were just the face of the NBA. And just on top of that, just super talented.
Right. But how about today? Like the guys playing today, who are some of the players that you like today, like a Klay Thompson, a Carey, a James, a Davis, a Greek Freak, you know, who are some of the players, a Westbrook, who are some of the players that you really like watching today?
Yeah, the game has changed so much. I love the athleticism of these guys. I think LeBron James is such a great, great talent. To be as big as he is, to do some of the things he does on the court. I love Westbrook. He can flat out put it up. His motor goes all the time and never gets tired. And of course, Carey can just flat out shoot the ball. I just don't think he knows his range. This guy keeps his body in tough shape. And but I love Carey. I love the way these guys play. Oh, yeah, the great thing is that he's going to be the next face of the NBA. He's got everything that you want in the ball player. He got the full package.
Yeah. But, you know, people say the game has changed. And I partially agree with that, Kenny. It's changed only because of the philosophy, and now everyone is trying to shoot as many threes as possible. But I got to tell you, if I were coaching today, and I haven't coached in about 12 seasons, and I tell people that for the last 12 years, I've got the best record of any coach. I'm undefeated, okay? But if I were coaching today, I would still look for the Craig Sheltons and the Adrian Dantleys and the big people inside, because I believe fast nickels beat slow dimes. But speaking to the game, we always had athletic people. We always had big guys who could go on the perimeter and shoot. Now, it wasn't encouraged like it is today or even coached, but we always had that. You know, people talk about our own KD, Kevin Durant. But when you watch a Kevin Durant play, if you go old school, that's Bob McAdoo.
Yeah, that is Bob McAdoo. Exactly.
That's Bob McAdoo.
Yeah. He is splitting the image of Bob McAdoo, exactly. There's nothing you can do, because there's nothing you can do with Bob McAdoo. But Kevin is a younger version of that, and I tell you, there's nothing you can do with that guy. He is, I wouldn't want to play him, because he can play inside and out, and you foul him, he's 90% on the line. There's nothing you can do with him.
Kenny Matthews is in the coach's corner, and Kenny, I've always stated that every single young boy or girl should play a sport at least one time, regardless of interest, regardless of skill level. They should play because of the carryover value. And we always talk about you, the individual, using sport. Don't let sport use you.
Yeah.
As I said, man, I've always admired you, of course, as a player, but even more so, you have been the epitome of class and how to conduct yourself in public. What do you attribute that to?
I think it comes from family. My mother and father has always ran a tight ship with us, and I think the family was, we just wasn't doing the kind of shit. That wasn't good enough. So I just wanted to just treat people the way they want to be treated. It's fairly easy for me, because I just want to treat people right. I just wanted to let them treat me right. So, and you can tell if they don't. And so you just have those guidelines and just go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, today I'm reading, of course, we all are aware of what's happening across the nation, across the world, in terms of people using a platform to speak out of the social injustice, police brutality, etc. The Black Lives Matter movement is picking up tremendous steam. I see where the NFL are going to have some decals on their helmets, and the NBA, they'll do the special jersey. But being a high-level athlete and having a platform, what are your thoughts on athletes using their platform to speak out on the injustice that he or she may witness?
Well, we definitely need a strong voice, and it seems to me that to have someone with a strong voice and a tremendous background helps a great deal. But I think they need to listen to all people, because everybody has something to say about this. But we need the sports figures or the major role models to step up and to give us support. But I think it's going pretty decent, and I like the way things are going in the right direction. So we have to just pray and hope that it continues to stay like that.
Yeah. Well, man, look, this has been a treat for me. As I said, I've always respected you and admired you as a ball player, but most important, as a man. And, man, great interview, great insight. And use these last couple of minutes, as you see, to leave our listeners with some parting shots. We call it words of wisdom. Wow. So I'm going to be like your coaches, Joe Dean and Jimmy V. I'm going to pass you the ball and get out your way.
Well, I think the youngsters today, or anybody today, need to lead by example. Listen to the older people. I think a lot of youngsters out here don't have the ear to listen to people before them. I'm not saying all the youngsters are like that, but they need to learn and get wise about the facts of life, because it goes fast. And we need more people to support what's going on today, and to help people go forward, because the world is changing. The world is changing. And we need to have all the support we have to help one another.
Can you still shoot the 15, 20-footer, Kenny?
Hey, Butch, you wouldn't believe it, but I keep a ball in my truck, and just shot the day before yesterday, and didn't miss many.
Oh, no. Well, you're not going to miss many, no question about it. Hey, Kenny, always a pleasure, man. This has been special, and it's an honor for me to have you here in the Coach's Corner with this visit. I know our listeners have enjoyed it, and man, you continue to be the great, solid, well-rounded individual that you are. You are an example for the young people, but you know, some of your contemporaries who, you know, maybe have hit on some hard times, but you are a great example for them.
Well, thank you so much, Butch. I'm glad that you gave me a chance to tell my story. It's been fantastic.
Fantastic. And, folks, that was Kenny Matthews, Dunbar, North Carolina State. But before then, see, some of y'all didn't know, he was the king of Banneker Junior High and Banneker Playground. And hope you enjoyed the one-on-one in the Coach's Corner this evening with Kenny Matthews. Tomorrow at 7 p.m., we will have another legend, both on and off the court. You hear me speaking of him all the time. He is from Dunbar High School, class of 68. Reds Bowman, also known as Randolph Horton. And that's going to be a very interesting conversation with one of the all-time great all-around athletes who now is just gives back to so many of the DMV, and just a great, great human being. Randolph Horton, Reds Bowman, will be in the Coach's Corner tomorrow at 7 p.m. And I want to thank, speaking of Hortons, I want to thank Hortons Funeral Service for making this show possible. They're located 600 Kennedy Street Northwest, 202-829-9000. That's 202-829-9000. And if you're in need of any dental work, it is Dr. Edward T. Buford. He is at the U Street Quarter, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. So you go in, get your teeth straight, and then you go next door and say, "Hey, Kamal, give me one of them chili dogs." And you can reach Dr. Buford at 202-667-8818. And again, I always want to thank my super producer, Rick Hampton Sr. And folks, if you want to get a copy of this interview and others, just go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Again, the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed it. And tomorrow in the Coach's Corner will be Randolph Horton, a.k.a. Reds Bowman. But until then, make good decisions, because life is hard, but it's even harder when you're stupid. And we'll see you.